Good afternoon. Welcome to this edition of Radio Linguistica. It's about the transatlantic relations. Is there a new honeymoon after the visit of President Biden? Well, those of you who live in Brussels could not have overlooked the event. Police everywhere, helicopters in the air, big parts of the city fended off. Much more than the normal usance linked to EU summits. This has to be a visit of an American president. Indeed, the first EU-US summit in Brussels after Joe Biden's accession to power took place this week. Well, Biden came to Brussels. Have all the disputes who have started sometimes even before Trump's presidency, but then had been sharpened, could all these been resolved? What are the most important issues and what are the most important results? Please, Jorge.
Yes, so good morning, Conrad, and maybe we can start by directly addressing your question if this is a new honeymoon. And well, in fact, honeymoons come when there is a new marriage, but in fact, this marriage is a pretty old one, and they know each other for more than 70 years. I mean, the Transatlantic Alliance is one of the oldest ones, and it was one of the most solid ones until Trump came to office, and that altered everything. And what we have seen is that Biden's victory and this summit, precisely what they were trying to address was to get rid of those irritants that were in the middle of the relationship, turn all those nice words, statements that we saw over the past months into concrete actions and deliverables. And those values that both sides always are happy to stress that they share into a common agenda again. And here, there are, of course, in the bilateral relationship between the two of the largest economies together with China, of course, there are many, many fields. In some of them, since Biden won the elections or rather got to the White House, we've seen closer cooperation from day one, for example, on climate. I mean, the change, of course, was huge. But in some other fields, there was a lot to do. I mean, the new administration didn't amend the decisions taken by the predecessor. One of the clearest examples is, of course, trade, where the Europeans were, let's say, very insistent and pushy on addressing two outstanding issues, which are, it's the tariff dispute, the one in the context of Boeing and Airbus, as we see in the slide, and on the steel and aluminium dispute. Which was actually approved on the grounds of national security, which make everything worse because we're talking here about two old allies. So there was a lot of on the agenda, but something that helped a lot to achieve the results that we're going to talk about now was the perception that, especially for the Biden administration, that they needed the Europeans on their side as soon as possible to tackle the risk posed by the rise of China. So having, as usual, having a common adversary or even enemy in the US eyes, brings old allies closer. So China, that was that incentive, that glue that helped to restore, maybe in a faster pace, the EU-US relationship, especially in the trade part.
Well, let's talk about China immediately. But first, does, for example, this long-lasting dispute on Boeing and Airbus, which has started already before Trump, much before Trump, since 17 years. So has it been resolved now?
Yes. Well, in fact, both of your questions are related, because from the U.S. Prince, the agreement on Boeing and Airbus was very much informed by the need to tackle the rise of China, because the U.S. and Europe are both market economies, and they have similar agendas, values, etc., etc. They wanted to reach a common ground on civil aviation and the subsidies that they could or couldn't give to their large manufacturers, because China is already becoming a big player on this field. So if they don't agree on this, they're going to see how China is going to pump billions of euro remnants into their manufacturers. So they wanted to, let's say, reach an understanding of what can be done and what cannot be done in order to, let's say, have some rule-based system for the aircraft landscape. Because, otherwise, what could happen is what we have seen already with China in many other industries, for example, in steel and aluminium. So what was agreed was that there will be a truce. So they prolonged the truce in the tit-for-tat tariff battle that they had for the last couple of years, if I'm not wrong, after the WTO allowed the U.S. for imposing the first tariffs, and then the permission came for the Europeans, although the amount of money was smaller. It was around $7 billion versus $4 billion, more or less.
Yes, they talked always about motorbikes and wine. So exactly. That was were the symbols of this tit-for-tat.
But it's also bourbon, it's also orange juice. I mean, there are, of course, the list of products is very long. But so, yes, they agreed to prolong the truce, that the first small truce that they agreed with between von der Leyen and Biden during their first call in March for 5 years. And during those 5 years, they're going to keep negotiating. So basically, it's just kicking the can down the road. But they have created some structure, a working group, and some parameters already to to steer the discussion towards a more limited framework in terms of what can be done with subsidies. For example, they said that in terms of research and development, they have to be full transparent, that the credits they offer have to be market-based, and they shouldn't be, the company shouldn't receive any kind of subsidies or tax reliefs outside the research and development. And especially they highlight as one of the priorities cooperating to address the challenges of unfair practices of non-market economies, I mean, namely China. So, and in fact, in Biden's statement welcoming the agreement from the very start almost, what he highlighted is that this agreement, the Boeing Airbus agreement, will help to address the challenges that bring China in other fields. So for Biden, this agreement from the very start had this China angle.
So what are the most virulent reproaches and criticism addressed to China on market issues?
Yes, because, I mean, of course, here we're talking almost exclusively with about economy and trade. But of course, I mean, precisely the reason why the EU is calling China a systemic rival. I mean, they always say a partner on issues like climate, a competitor on issues like trade and economy, but they say systemic rival, and that is because of the different democratic system and in terms of human. So here, I mean, in that sphere, let's say the concern runs deeper because it's about the values and principles. But in the field of trade and economy, the main complaint for Europeans, especially over the last 2 years when they start to become more assertive in dealing with China, was the unfair an unbalanced relationship, because the European economy is very open to Chinese, but the Chinese economy is rather close to foreign players. And also some of the conditions that China imposed for foreign companies to operate there, for example, in terms of joint ventures. Also, the forced transfer of technology that they impose on European or American firms. Also, in terms of the stealing of IP, which was a constant for many years, and also the immense amount of subsidies and public aid that China offers via credits for exports or other kind of support to their companies. So all these is being addressed, I would say, at different levels. One is between what they call like-minded countries. So first, it's a cooperation that the EU and the US are starting to have to address China, and they want to include like-minded countries, as I said, like Japan and Canada, for example, and South Korea will be there also in that group. And another level, which will progress more slowly, is at the WTO level, and this has been a demand of the Europeans. For
just for explanation, well, the World Trade Organization.
Exactly, the World Trade Organization. Sorry. So here, I mean, we have to remember that any decision taken at the World Trade Organization has to be taken by consensus. So you need the unanimity, including of China. So the progress here is rather slow, and they've been discussing already how to, let's say, improve the rule book of the World Trade Organizations to better cope with new challenges. For example, industrial subsidies that Beijing gives to their companies, and also to better address the new situations that we might face with electronic e-commerce and things like that. So here, one of the points on the agenda on the EU-US summit, was precisely the WTO reform, something that the EU Brussels has been pushing for a long time. And another issue to be addressed here is not only to update the rules, but also to unblock the dispute settlement system of the organization, because we have to recall that right now that system is paralyzed, basically because the US during the Trump era didn't, I mean, refuse to reach an agreement on the renovation of the judge, that are part of the appellate body, which is a key part of the dispute settlement system. Because without the appellate body, all the cases basically, the system is not, it's interrupt, let's say. And without the dispute settlement system, the WTO is basically handicapped. Of course, it plays a bigger role on other areas, like trade deals, multilateral deals and stuff like that. But it's one important pillar of the organization is paralyzed. So this is another area where Washington and Brussels commit to work together, but we have no details, no indication on how far this cooperation will go, stages, deadlines, or anything like that.
So perhaps a lot of things will be held secreted for the moment. And, well, normal citizens would wonder if there can be any progress if everybody has to agree. But we'll see.
We'll see, indeed. We seen in the past how the Doha round failed, also because of the difficulties to reach an agreement at consensus level. And now the next challenges will be, for example, what will happen with the patents for the vaccines, where you also need the unanimity consensus. And this is an issue that they want to reach an agreement by the end of the year. So let's see.
Well, officially, Biden came to join the NATO summit in Brussels. So what was were the issues on this in this part and what decisions were taken?
Yeah, well, here, of course, the first decision was not, I mean, the first important thing to remark is not a decision itself, but it's the radical change of tone. I mean, it's from Trump, who considered the alliance like something not only superfluous but unnecessary, to someone, a president that wants to anchor the U.S. Very robustly in the transatlantic alliance. And it's like, I mean, rather like old-time presidents highlighting the importance of this military alliance to not only to address Russia, which is of course the old adversary, and as the NATO chief Stoltenberg said, the relationship with Moscow are at the lowest point since the end of the Cold War, but also especially what Biden tried to do is to shift the alliance towards China, and he succeeded somehow, because as Stoltenberg said, the first time that China was mentioned in NATO conclusions was only 18 months ago, and now the conclusions had a clear tone. China was playing a prominent role in the conclusions, and the tone was rather assertive. They described China as a challenge to the international security and order, and they list a series of issues that they were concerned, like their nuclear capacities, the military cooperation with Russia, their tech development, also the fact of the human rights and violation and democratic erosion, things like that. So in that regard, I would say that the first thing that happened is not only the arrival of the return of the US to the alliance, but also how that return shift the alliance towards China. And then in terms of specifics, I would say that they keep pushing for increasing the defense spending to 2%, which is the target that every NATO partner, the 30 countries committed to do by 2024, if I'm not wrong. I mean, there is still a long way to go. I think that only 10 countries already met that target. And also, since this is the country I know best, that the next NATO summit would be in Spain.
But there are other internal problems in NATO. For example, the behavior of Turkey. Was something decided on or discussed on this behalf?
Well, I mean, by then, Erdogan had actually a pretty active agenda talking to leaders, including Biden. And as Biden said, for example, with Putin, I mean, it's good when leaders talk face to face. And Macron, if I'm not wrong, he also spoke with Erdogan, and we have to recall that France was one of the countries who had a most, let's say, antagonistic position with Turkey. There was even an embargo of French products, if you recall. And that, I mean, the discussions helped to tone down a bit the tensions.
So nothing concrete, but the tensions are a little bit lower.
Well, I mean, there were some specifics, let's say, but in terms of the EU, I mean, NATO-Turkey relations, I mean, Turkey is a member of the alliance, and actually, some of there are, for example, Patriot missiles from different countries, including Spain, on Turkey and things like that. But on the EU-Turkey relations, that's another chapter.
Yes, but it's interesting that in NATO, inside NATO, there are so antagonistic forces, and Turkey following its own agenda in Syria, in Libya, and so on. So, and with another in the conflict with another NATO partner, with Greece. So is a lot to do in future. So, is it already possible to see a little bit the approach of Biden in these hot questions?
Well, I mean, to be frank, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's.
We'll see. We'll see. Yes, we will discuss later about this. Now, another question is: the Commission has announced the Green Deal, and U.S. is still one of the biggest polluters after China. So, first place China, second place U.S., and then India and Russia. So, it's very important what the U.S. does in terms of climate. So what was it addressed, and if yes, what was decided, or what do they want to do?
Yeah, so on climate, as I said at the beginning, it was one of the fields where we saw one of the earliest changes of tone in the Biden administration. He immediately committed to the Paris agenda and the Paris goals, and he also set new targets for CO2 reduction, and he from the start, Kerry, I mean the climate envoy of Biden came to Brussels. So there's been a lot of work and on ongoing discussion between the two sides. And in terms of specifics, this summit brought some concrete results, I would say, but in terms of, let's say, building the structure to progress and to strengthen the bilateral cooperation. For example, they committed to establishing a EU-US high-level climate action group to discuss all the cooperation on climate policy. And also, one of the priority areas for that is to establish a transatlantic green technology alliance, because what they want to do is to scale up green technologies and all the policies that might help to accelerate moving away from carbon to more sorry to coal from coal to greener technologies and sources of energy production that are of course less polluting. And here we I mean one of the areas that we have to look at for potential even clashes is the proposal for a carbon border tax. We know that this is going to be a challenging proposal for the Commission because you have many countries that have spoken against it already, including the US. It has to be WTO, World Trade Organization compatible. So they are working on a thin line. Plus, we had on Tuesday, we had a briefing, a few journalists, including myself, we had a briefing with the trade representative of the US, the chief negotiator of Biden for these topics, with Catherine Tai. And she didn't rule out taking measures if the EU starts imposing tariffs on American products or in the context of this carbon border tax. Of course, I mean, maybe one of the possibilities to avoid that scenario is to establish what some people have called a carbon club or carbon border club of let's say again climate like-minded countries that all of them let's say have a si similar system in terms of climate goals, in terms of policies, and even in terms of defense measures. Between them, they don't take any retaliatory measure in terms of taxes, borders, or penalties. But again, I mean, we will have, first of all, we will have to wait until next month when the Commission will put forward the proposal and the details, and let's see how the US reacts at the end.
Well, we will certainly come back to this issue more times in the future because there's a lot to do, and of course a lot of problems to address linked to this Green Deal and all the trade consequences and so on. Well, another problem which raised more times in the last years with in the EU US trans in the transatlantic relations are the role of these big these huge IT US IT companies which sort of monopoly, have a monopoly, and they behave like this. So they don't guarantee data protection, they pay only ridiculous taxes, and they do censorship. So was it discussed, or what will be done about that?
Well, I mean, since we are running out of time, I would say that the most specific, one of the most specific deliverables of the summit was precisely that both sides agreed on a trade and technology council, which is an idea that the EU was pushing for since Biden was elected. And the idea is that this new body will help to will strengthen the cooperation on regulation, on standards, for example, in artificial intelligence, and also will help to ensure the supply chain in strategic products, for example, semiconductors. But this is for sure the tech cooperation. This might give us enough time, enough content to keep the discussion ongoing another day.
Well, thank you very much for this overview. Of course, there were a lot of topics, and there were a lot of topics on the summit. And we both know that not everything could be resolved or even taken decisions. So we have to look on these different fields in the future and see how they develop: climate, IT companies, trade, and relations with China, and so on. Let's see, and then we will discuss again on a special on a singular problem of those mentioned. Thank you very much, and see you again in the one of the next editions of Radio Linguistica. Thank you.